Good morning, everyone. It's an honor to be here. And thank you to Rabbi Charka and Karen for organizing this wonderful program. I'm going to talk loud. I'd like to begin my remarks this morning by drawing upon a common challenge that faces certain people when they take care of a loved one during an illness. God forbid, when that loved one passes away, it's not uncommon for a caretaker after Shiva to get up in the morning and say, "Now what?" So much of the previous days, months, and years has been filled with taking care of my loved one that just passed away. What do I do now? What's next? And the reason I share that challenge with you this morning is because when we think about Noah after the ark, in many ways, I believe Noah had that challenge. He was preoccupied with building the ark for over 100 years. He stayed in the ark for a full year. And then God says, "Noah, it's time to come out." And Noah opens the door to the ark, looks at a new world, and he says to himself, "Now what? What should I be doing? So much of my life has been preoccupied preparing for the deluge, living in the Teva, and now I'm completely lost." What's interesting, however, in contrast to the caretaker, Noah gets specific directions from the Almighty what exactly he should be doing. And it's those directions that I'd like to analyze with you this morning. If you have a source sheet in front of you, I'm looking now at source number 1. This is the beginning of chapter 9 of Genesis, Perek Tes. Vayivarech Elokim es Noach v'esbana vayomer lahem. And God blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, "Pru urevu umilu es haaretz. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Umorachem v'chitchem yeh al kol chayas haaretz. V'al kol of hashamayim, b'chol asher tirmos ha'adama, b'chol dagei hayam yadchem nitnu. And your fear and your dread shall be upon all the beasts of the earth, and upon all the fowl of the heaven, upon everything that creeps upon the ground, and upon all the flesh of the sea, for they have been given unto your hands." God doesn't just stop there. God doesn't tell Noah simply to have a family and be aware that the animals will fear you. God adds on a few more directives. Pasuk Gimel. Koremes asher hu chai lachem yelochla, kiyerek esav nasati lachem es kol. Every moving thing that lives shall be yours to eat, like the green vegetation. I have given you everything. This is a monumental moment for humanity. It's at this point that Noah is given permission to slaughter meat and eat animals. V'aches damchem l'nafshosichem edrosh miyad kolchaya edreshenu miyad ha'adam miyad ish echav edrosh es nefesh ha'adam. But your blood, but flesh with its soul, its blood you shall not eat. I actually did not read Pasuk Dalet, I skipped in the Hebrew. I have the English for you, I just read the English. Now let me read the English for Pasuk Hey. But your blood of your souls I will demand on an account. From the hand of every beast I will demand it. And from the hand of man, from the hand of each man, his brother, I will demand the soul of man. Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishafech ki betzelem okim asas ha'adam. Whoever sheds the blood of man, through man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God he made man. Essentially, God tells Noah, if you murder, I will hold you accountable for the act of killing somebody else, for spilling blood. And lastly, God repeats himself yet again, V'atem peru urevu shirtzu v'aretz urevu ba. And you be fruitful and multiply, swarm upon the earth and multiply thereon. So if I could just summarize for a moment the marching orders that Noah was given when he left the Teva: be fruitful and multiply, have a family. There will be a fear from all the animals on you, Noah, and all of humanity. You're allowed to eat meat However, I will hold you responsible and accountable should you shed the blood of a fellow human being. And lastly, be fruitful and multiply. So my question to you this morning is twofold. Of all of the various blessings that God could have bestowed upon Noah at this critical moment in Noah's life, why does he repeat what has already been told to Adam? Does that verse not seem very familiar to you? Look back at Pasuk Aleph one more time. Where do we hear that before? By Adam. That's a pasuk from Bereishis Aleph. If you look in source number 2, at the end of the first parak of Bereishis, Vayivarich Osam Elokim, Vayomer Lahem Elokim, Peru Urevu Umilu Es Haaretz V'Kivshua. God tells Adam, be fruitful, multiply, spread out throughout the land. So why does God need to repeat the same bracha to Noah? Additionally, embedded in that very pasuk that we just read, where God told Adam to be fruitful, to multiply, God also tells Noah that he will have dominion, he will have rule over all of the animal kingdom. So both components of what is told to Noah has already been told to Adam. Have a family, and you will rule over all the other creatures of the world. So what is the necessity of repeating both components of the blessing to Noah? That's essentially the main question, two parts. Why have a family again, and why remind Noah that he'll be in charge of the animals? I'm sorry? He wasn't around, that's true. But then again, we don't have a repetition for every generation as it comes up. It's a fair point. Right? Excellent. Good. Beautiful. So you raise a beautiful point, which is echoed, or perhaps was already said many, many centuries earlier by the Radak. In source number 2, the Radak points out that there is a very strong parallel between the lives of Adam and the lives of Noah and his family. What's the parallel? Both of them are living at a beginning, at a time of creation. Exactly. It's very, very interesting. We'll look at the Radak, and then we'll see the Psukim, which parallel each other. That Adam was a first, and Noah was a first. Look at what the Radak writes in source number 3. Vayivarich Elokim. Even though Adam and his family received this blessing at the initial moments of creation, Ata, when Ata is spelled an ayin, it means now, Hayalahem kitchilas habriya. Yes, but this is a new creation which is taking place. Kinischadesh ha'olam, achar shahaya sohu vavohu. The world was recreated after it was completely filled with nothingness. Shaharei nischasa ha'aret b'mayim. After all, the world was completely covered with water in the times of Noah and the Mabul. V'habracha masha amar lehem peru urvu umorachem v'chitchem. And that's why God has to repeat the bracha. Now, this is not something that the Radak made up. As I mentioned, you can see it in the Psukim. Look with me, this is the very first pasuk in the entire Torah. Actually, it's the second pasuk in the entire Torah. Source number 4. V'aretz haisa sohu vavohu v'choshech apnei tehom. And the world was astonishingly empty, and darkness was on the face of the deep. V'ruach Elokim merachefes apnei hamayim. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the water. So what did nothingness look like in the very beginning of time? It looked like water and nothing else. That was what the world looked like if you would take a time machine back to day number one. Now look at source number five, the way the Torah describes what the earth looked like at the time of the flood. V'hamayim gavru me'od me'od al ha'aretz, v'yichusu kol he'harim ha'gvoim asher tachas kol ha'shamayim. And the waters became exceedingly powerful upon the earth, and all the lofty mountains that were under the heavens were covered up. So if I would take that same time machine and go back to what the world looked like when Noah was in the Teva, what did it look like? It was covered up with water. It was the exact same nothingness. So God started creation with Adam after the world was filled with... Okay, one second. I'm happy to hear your point, just one second. But just think about that scene. The world was nothingness, and then Adam was brought into the world. God says, be fruitful, be multiply, have families, populate the world. And in the times of Noah also, the world was filled with nothingness. It was just water. Noah is the one, he and his family are chosen. After they come out of the Teva, it's a recreation of sorts. God has to repeat the bracha because creation happens again. Yes. Right, it's not... Right. So I'm not suggesting that literally that everything which happened that we read about in Bereshis Perek Aleph with the 6 days of creation happens again at the time of Noah. But what the Radak is saying is that on some level, the world was filled with Sohu Vavohu. Adam came on the scene. God said, Peru Uruvu. And with Noah, the world was filled with Sohu Vavo, just water. Noah comes on the scene after the Teva, God says, Peru Urvu. Now what's interesting is that if you do compare those psukim, the bracha that God gives to Adam versus the bracha that God gives to Noah, yes, Peru Urvu is very much the same. But the language that God uses when describing Noah's dominion or his rule over the animal kingdom is actually markedly different. If you go back for a moment to source number two, to the bracha that Hashem gives Adam, God says, "Pruvu mulu as aretz v'kivshuha uridu b'degas hayam uv'of hashemayim v'chol chayah rameses al aretz." God uses one word, uridu, which means to subdue. But now, if you look back at the bracha, the marching orders that were given to Noah, they're more complex. And there's an additional word there. There are actually two words. Both of them are new. So what do we make of that? What are the words that God uses in this case? Looking back at source number one, Umorachem v'chitchem, which means, using the English translation that I provided, and your fear and your dread. So the question is, okay, I understand a recreation, but what do we make of the fact that in this recreation that's happening through Noah, the language that God uses vis-a-vis his relationship with the animal kingdom is actually quite different. Adam was told, Uridu. Noach is told, Umarachem v'chitchem yiyeh al kol chayot ha'aretz, so on and so forth. Chayot ha'aretz, so on and so forth. What do we make of the different terms? We know in the Torah, there's really no such thing as a perfect synonym. The words mean something different. So what do we make of the different terminology that God uses? So the animal kingdom will be afraid of humankind, human beings. Well, okay, so we'll see as we go along that it's not perfect. Not every animal is perfectly afraid of us. But just think about what happens when you're walking home from shul and there's squirrels that are scurrying about. You know, when you put down your foot, they run away as a general rule. It also happens with rabbis. When they get up to speak, they run away. But that's people, not squirrels. Okay, so let's look at the Ramban and go back for a moment to what I said when I was just introducing the psukim. Yes? Okay. Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Right, there was something good. Excellent, very good. So we're going to see that idea, but I want to specifically draw upon something that I said sort of under my breath, but we're going to look at it right now. Something monumental changed when Noah left the Teva. God told Noah he can go and have a barbecue. When Adam was created, God said, make a salad. Whatever you want, a shtickle cucumber, a little pepper, some mandarin tomatoes, chickpeas. It's the type of salad I would want. A little feta cheese too. You got to have a little protein. But when Noah leaves the Teva, God gives Noah permission to kill animals and eat them. Now let's look first at the Ramban. The Ramban in source number 6. This is actually Ramban in Perek Aleph. And the Ramban traces the difference. What happens from the time of Noah to from the time of Adam to the time of Noah? Why is it that Noah is suddenly given permission to have a barbecue? What changed? So listen to a very, very important Ramban, source number 6. Going on the Pasuk, where God tells Adam, Hinei nasati lachem es kol esev zorea zera. God says to Adam, all of the vegetation is for you to eat and enjoy. V'haya zeh, mipnei sheba le'nefesh hatnua, yesh lahem k'tzas ma'ala b'nafsham. All living creatures have a leg up, if you will, on the vegetation. Vegetation, it doesn't have a soul. Yeah, grass is considered to be living. Fruits on the tree are growing, but they don't have a soul. But animals, all living creatures, are blessed on some level with a soul. It's not the same soul that human beings have, but they're living in a different way than the vegetation. Nidzmu ba lebale hanefesh hamaskeles. On one way, all creatures are similar to human beings. V'yesh lehem b'chira b'tovasam u'mizonehem. Animals can choose to do what's good for them and what they choose and what they want to eat. V'yivrechu min hatzar v'hamisa. Animals know to stay away from danger. It's part of an animal instinct. When they hear a loud sound, they run away. Where the animals don't just gallop, you know, horses just don't gallop off the side of a mountain. They know how to watch themselves. And this is all part of the soul that was given to animals. The Pasuk of Omer, the Pasuk in Koheles, Shlomo HaMelech says, Mi yodea ruach bnei Adam ha'ola hi lemala, v'ruach ha'behema ha'yaredes hi lemata laret. Is there such a difference, Shlomo asks, between the nefesh of a human being and the nefesh of an animal? We share many commonalities. And that's why initially, when Adam was created, God said, make salad, don't make barbecues, because you have no right to take away the soul that was embedded and given to each living creature. So what changed? Why is it that Noah leaves the Teva? He's suddenly allowed to have meat. V'kashir chatu. But when the world sinned, v'hishchis kol basar es darko al aretz, like you mentioned before, and all of the living creatures corrupted their way. V'nigzar she'amusu b'mabul. Everything was going to be wiped out of the mabul. U'bavur Noah hitzil mehem l'kiyum hamin. And it's only because Noah built the Teva and saved the animals. Therefore, writes the Ramban, Nasan lehem rishus lishchot v'le'echol kikiyumam ba'avura. Basically, Noah is responsible for all of the animals that we see today. If Noah would not have allowed them to come into the Teva, we would have a world without animals. And as an act of Hakaras Hatov, God says, Noah, you're responsible for the salvation of the animal kingdom. Now you may eat animals. Yes. Kiyumam. Kiyum means that they are kiyumam babru. They are sustained. They are alive because of what Noah did.
No,
Ba'avuro means because of Noah. Meaning the animals exist because of Noah. Because Noah brought them into the ark, therefore the animals exist. And that's why, just give me a moment. So that's why when Noah opens the doors to the Teva, God says, Agroisa Yashikoach, you did a good job, Noah. You saved all of the animals. Now you may eat them. With this in mind, we can understand the extra language that God uses in the bracha to Noah. God does not say, uridu, you should subdue. There are words that are used that are far more intense and powerful. Look at what the Kli Yakar writes in source number 7. Umorachem mechitchem. Af al pi shekvar ne'amar vayerdu b'degas hayam. Even though God already told Adam, you will live, you will subdue all of the animals. Mikomakom hosif kan hamora v'achitat. Mora and chitat, the concept of fear and the concept of fear and I just want to translate the other English word accurately. Thank you. Dread. The concept of fear and dread will now exist. All of the animals will fear you and dread you. Because now Noah and all of humanity, we are now allowed to kill animals and eat them. Why would an ox or any animal for that matter willingly go to the slaughterhouse and not try to run away and try to rebel? Imlo ki yad Hashem asas azos ki hitil mo'o shel ha'adam al kol haba'ale chayim al kol asher yachpot yate osam. Essentially, says the Kli Yakar, the words that God uses over here tell us that now, not only does Noah have the ability to simply subdue the animals, but there is a dread that the animals have when they see a human being. And even though animals do have a capacity, have animalistic instincts, they don't fight back when they're taken to the slaughter. They willfully follow their master wherever they are taken. And that happened right now. So God does change the relationship between mankind and the animal world. We are now even more powerful over the animals because now we have the ability to shech them and they won't fight back. Now the Kli Yakar says we also can understand why in the same set of psukim, God not only tells us that we will have the power over animals in a new way, we can eat them, but God also warns us and says, don't think because I'm allowing you to spill the blood of an animal, that you can do what? Spill the blood of a fellow human being. That's not acceptable. Writes the Kli Yakar, the underlined part of source number 7, V'lefi shehitir harigas haba'ale chayim, since God now has given Noah the ability to kill animals, salka daita chamina, it's a Gemara phrase, it means I would have thought, shegam harigas adam hutra, that maybe now, if I'm allowed to spill blood, I can also spill the blood of a fellow human being. Talmud Omar, therefore God comes along and says, V'ach estamchem l'nafshor seichem, but I will hold you accountable for spilling the blood of a fellow human being. So yes, the psukim are similar. Yes, the concept of ruling over the animal kingdom was already implanted in the universe at the time of Adam, but it's deepened here. Because we have this shift between human beings only allowed to have salads, to be herbivorous, and now we're allowed to kill animals, we're allowed to take advantage of the animals and eat them, and therefore we need new words in the bracha to reflect this idea. Yes. Right. So it's interesting. I don't know if it would simply be the kosher versus non-kosher animals, but domesticated animals have a far greater sense of a fear, I think, of human beings than the wild animals. So it's an interesting observation. Yes. Right. Very interesting question. What help does God give Noah to ensure that the same mistakes won't happen? So the truth is that if you look at the end of Parakhes, God has a conversation with himself, not with Noah. But the Torah records that Noah leaves the ark, he offers korbanos, and Vayomer Elokim Elibo, God, this is not on your source sheet. God says to himself, doesn't share with Noah, that I'm never going to destroy the world again. Gives the word. Not that the evil won't necessarily happen again, but God tells himself, quote unquote, that he will not destroy the world again. That information is only shared with Noah a little bit later on in our chapter. So, in terms of ensuring that the type of evil that exists in the world won't occur again, there is no guarantee. But we do have a guarantee from God that God won't destroy the world again. Last question, I want to move on. Yes. It's a good question. If you look back at Pasuk Gimel, the only thing which Noah is told is Korem es asher uchai lachem yelach le'ochla. It's for you to eat. Now, did Noah understand, well, if it's for me to eat, that really means it's for my benefit, and therefore anytime I can benefit from an animal, it's permitted to kill it? That's an interesting question. I'm not sure. It's an interesting question. But the text makes it very clear that it's related to food. Good. If you look at the Malbim was one of the 19th century commentary, and he was a linguist par excellence. You know, so when I said before that there are no such thing as synonyms in Hebrew, that there are no two words that mean exactly the same thing, every different word has a different connotation. There's something new to learn from a word which might seem repetitious, but is different. So the Malbim's commentary in the Torah is filled with observations of, well, yes, these two words seem like they mean the same thing, but in fact, they have very, very different meanings. So I just want to show you that in this context, because I think it's fascinating. The Malbim in source number 8 writes as follows, Omorachem v'chitchem yeh, sheyehei lahem mipanav yira tvius, that there's this natural, instinctual fear that animals have when they come in contact with a human. But writes the Malbim, v'yesh hevdel bein mora uvein chitat. There's a difference between the words that the Torah uses, morachem v'chitchem, shehamora hu shelo ya'aseh lo ra. The word mora means that animals will not do harm to human beings. V'chitat hu ha'achna ha'tvi'is, kimo sheyichna ha'katan lifnei ha'gadol. Okay, you go into certain classrooms, you don't always see that. But chitat implies a certain humility or submissiveness that animals have in front of human beings, just like a child in front of an adult. That's why I said you don't always see that in every classroom that you go into. But the point of the Malbim is that there are two ideas that are expressed to Noach at this moment. The idea of Mora is that there will be a fear that animals will have when they come in contact with humans. And chitat not doesn't just mean fear, there's a submissiveness that animals will have in front of human beings. And that works very nicely with the Kliyakar, who says, why would an animal willingly follow a human to be slaughtered? And the answer is because of the words that God uses at this moment, that he implants these feelings inside of all of the animals. And as such, Noah is able to navigate because he now has food to eat, and it certainly is a beautiful idea from the Malbim. So what I would say right now is that I'd like to end the first part of this year. We've got a little bit more to do, but the first part of this year, I hope you can understand now when you contrast the bracha given to Adam versus the bracha given to Noah, you can have an appreciation for why the need for the repetition. Like the Radak says, at both times, the world was empty, just water, and then Adam comes on the scene, and Noah comes on the scene. And at both times, God tells the men to have children, to multiply, to fill up the land. That's why Peru Uru is necessary. Why is the second idea necessary in terms of that animals will have a fear, or we will subdue the animal kingdom? Well, Adam was told he's the one in charge. that you will subdue the animal kingdom. But Noach is told much more. You can eat animals. And now animals will have a fear, but also a submissiveness in front of humankind. End of what I would like to call the informational analysis. But there is a whole different direction that we can go in to understand the blessings that were given to Noach at this particular juncture. Why did Noach need to hear, again, have a family? Why did Noach need to be told that he will have the ability to rule over the animal kingdom? Why does God need to mention that you should not murder? There's a whole different way of understanding these psukim. But by way of introduction to what I'd like to call the emotional analysis, I'd like to read you a story that comes from Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau's book, Out of the Depth. It's a fantastic book. I imagine some of you in this room have read it. If you have not, it's a wonderful, inspiring book. Rabbi Lau's book, Out of the Depths. So in that story, he goes back to a time in his life when he was the neighborhood rabbi in North Tel Aviv, and his father-in-law, Rabbi Yitzchak Yedidya Frankel, was the rabbi in the southern neighborhoods of Tel Aviv. So listen to what Rabbi Lau writes. During my term as neighborhood rabbi in North Tel Aviv, my father-in-law, Rabbi Yitzchak Yedidya Frankel, who then served as rabbi of the southern neighborhoods, asked me to accompany him on a visit to the eminent Yiddish poet, Itzik Menger. Rabbi Frankel had told me that this wise man of letters, who was also a dramatist and novelist, was hospitalized in Hartsfield Geriatric Hospital in Gedera in serious medical condition and that he might not recover. Rabbi Frankel wanted to perform the mitzvah of visiting the sick by comforting this person in whom the public no longer took an interest, a lonely man at the end of his life. We went to see Itzik Menger. We entered a dark room from which emanated fumes of alcohol. Rabbi Frankel took immediate stock of the situation. After a few minutes, I looked at Rabbi Frankel as if to ask whether our being there might do more harm than good. After all, Itzik Menger lay there lifeless, completely gaunt as a drying twig, eyes closed. But slowly, Menger opened one eye, and then the other. His small but sharp eyes recognized my father-in-law immediately. The first thing he said to him was, "Shalom Aleichem." "Rabbi Frankel, you shouldn't have any complaints or grudges against me. Don't think that something bad has happened. Don't criticize. I am Noah after the flood." Rabbi Frankel and I exchanged glances. We both thought the man was hallucinating, either because he had been drinking or because his illness had affected his lucidity. We remained silent as he continued. "You know, Rabbi Frankel, ever since my childhood, one question has been bothering me. The verse says, Noah walked with God. He was the only one God invited into the ark. The world began from Noah. He was truly exceptional. But what happened then? As it says in our Torah, and Noah planted a vineyard, and he drank of the wine, and he was drunken. The emaciated, ill poet continued to press his point, as if powered by an internal fire. How can a tzaddik also become a drunkard? I always wondered about this, but now I have reached an age and a condition where I understand Noah. He entered the ark with his wife, his three sons, and their wives. But when he went back home and he began to look for his hometown, his shtetl, he found nothing. He wanted to visit his neighborhood shtibl, his study hall, his synagogue, but found not a trace. Where was the corner grocery store? Where was the postman he knew? The wagon driver? No one was left. No house or street, no neighborhood or friends, not a living soul. In order to forget his solitude and the destruction of his world, Noah drank wine and became a drunkard." Menger explained, his voice weak. Then he spoke forcefully.
I am Noah after the flood. Where is Warsaw? Where is Nalwiki in the old Jewish neighborhood there? He listed the names of the Hasidic communities and yeshivas in Warsaw, rabbis he had known there, and members of his family. Of all these, no one is left. I remain alone in this world. So you will excuse me, Rabbi Frankel, if sometimes, in order to forget the horrors, I drink a little. Noah opens the door to the Teva. What does he see? He sees nothing. He sees a world that is desolate. The waters have subsided, but there is nothing else there. So if you were Noah, and you just saw the entire world destroyed, what's the one thing you might not be running to do? Have more children? What's the point? What's the point? Now you'll tell me, Noah, what do you mean? God already said he's not going to destroy the world. Let's remember, at this point, at the beginning of Perek Tes, God did not share that information with Noah. That only comes a few psukim later. So Noah opens the door, and he sees nothing. He sees that the world is so vulnerable to destruction. What's the point of having children, asks Noah. This idea is reflected in the Medrash, not that you have in front of you, but the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah puts these very words into the mouth of Noah. The Medrash says, when God tells Noah, Tzeh min ha-teva, v'lo kibel alav latzeis, God says, Noah, leave. Noah doesn't want to go. Amar etzeh ve'ayeh para v'rava lima'areh. What's the point? I'll go and I'll have children for destruction? Noah opens the doors. Why should I leave the Teva? What good will happen? The world is so vulnerable. We can all die so quickly. The Abravanel, in a magnificent commentary, notes that Noah essentially had not one, but four legitimate concerns, points of anxiety that he was struggling with. If you look in source number 9, the Abravanel writes, "Ein safek shenoach uvanav betzesa min hateva hayu mishtomamim." What's mishtomamim? Shamim is they're depressed. They were overwhelmed. Umit avlim. What's an avel? Mourning. Noah was mourning. He was astounded. He was depressed. He was mourning. Al ha'avar. Nervous about. Oh, he was not nervous. He was depressed. He was overwhelmed about the past. And yireim upocha de meha asid. And he was also anxious about the future. Life was not all rosy when Noah opened the doors of the Teva. Just the opposite. The Abravanel writes that Noah's anxiety can actually be encapsulated in four different ideas. Ha'echad, number one. Shehayu mis'avlim amisas kroveyem v'ohaveyem. They were mourning the death of all of their loved ones, all of their relatives. Kol anshe sodam shesafu tamu min bahilos hamabul. You don't think Noah had some friends? You don't think Noah's family was more than just his three sons and their wives? Everybody else did not get. Nobody else got an invitation to Teva. They all died. V'hayu Noah uvana yichidim. Noah and his sons and their wives, they were the only ones left. Vishomimim bekarav aretz. They were overwhelmed, depressed at the sights that they saw. That's point number one. Number two. V'habeiz shehayu yireim upocha dimin hachayos hatrufos shebiyosam bekibbutz midini kibirishona, says the Abravanel, they were worried about the animals attacking. You see, before the Mabul, if a wild lion would come and attack a certain location, so what would happen? Well, there's strength in numbers. Everybody would gather around with their spears and kill the lion or shoot it away. Okay? Kisavo chaya kemo arev yiyu mitkabtzim anashim rabim lohorga. There was strength in numbers before the Teva. Avalata, with an eye now, bihiyosam yechidim, now it's just Noah and his boys. Hayu mi'usadim lechol mikre upega.
They were so nervous about every little thing. Who will help us? We are alone. When the animals come to attack, me and my little boys, that's what's going to fend off the wild animals? A very legitimate concern. Number three, the bottom of I'm not sure if it's the bottom in your sheets. I printed it out a little bit different. Number three, v'hagimo.
Sheyu mishavlim ba'omram ma'nuchal.
What are we going to eat? Ki ein lanu pri. The world wasn't filled with fruits when Adam was created. So Chazal tells us everything was fully created also. The fruits, there were beautiful fruits on the trees. And Adam knew he could eat from all of this. When Noah opened the doors to the Teva, there were not fruits that filled the trees. There wasn't an abundance of food that they could take immediately and eat. There was no fruit of the land. There were no vegetables to take from. So he'll tell me, Noah, we'll take some seeds and he'll start planting. We know it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes a lot of days, a lot of months. It could maybe even be a full year until fruit grow. Between that time, what will we eat? We'll die from starvation. And listen to these words. This is what Noah was thinking. Better to die in that flood than to die a slow and agonizing death of starvation. That's what Noach is thinking. He's opening the doors of the Teva. What am I going to eat? And Noach is quite nervous. And lastly, writes the Rav Hanel, V'hadalid,
Shehayu yireyim pen yipo kitata umidanim bein achim v'yargu ze et ze.
Noach is really afraid. We're such a small population. What happens if a conflict should arise similar to Cain and Hevel? Chazal tell us that there were many more people around by the time Cain and Hevel were fighting, and Cain kills Hevel. We know that Chava had more children, so the loss of a life is quite significant, but it doesn't call the entire humanity into jeopardy. But Noach thinks to himself, we're just four men. Let's say there's a feud, and the brothers start fighting. And what happened with Cain and Hevel repeats itself. What's going to be? Who's going to populate the world? Four legitimate fears. Again, where is everybody? Everyone's dead. Everybody's dead. What's the point of having more kids? It's so vulnerable. The world can be destroyed again. Number two, who is going to help us fight off the animals? We're so vulnerable. We're so small. Number three, what are we going to eat? There is no food available. And lastly, what happens if there is a feud? How quickly our numbers can dwindle and we can become extinct. And corresponding to all of those concerns, God speaks to Noah when he leaves the Teva. The psukim that we started with this morning are not simply a hodgepodge of mitzvos that God gives to Noah on day number one post-mabul. The mitzvos that we read, the psukim that we read, specifically speak to assuage the anxieties of Noah. Look at what the Abrav Hanel writes. V'cheneged ha'echad, shehu meha'eder ha'krovim, ve'o'avim shemesu lahem b'mabul. Corresponding to the mourning that Noach must have felt when he opened the doors and he saw everybody was gone, God says, "Peru urevu milu es haaretz, go out, be fruitful and multiply." Klomar atem tasu krovim ve'ohavim hayotzei mechalatzeichem. You will create new families, new relationships. Shehem yu yoser ne'emanim be'ava.
there will be a closeness that you'll have with your family that will sustain you. V'ki'ilu amar ani etein lachem koach rav v'piriya v'rivya be'ofen shetimalei ha'aretz mizarachem meira. In a way that you're going to fill up the land quickly. Number two, what about that fear that Noah had about the vulnerability? We're so small. What happens when animals attack? So the Bravanel says, well, that's why God says to Noah, don't worry. Umarachem v'chitchem. There will be a fear that the animals will have. And when they see you, they will run away. Don't be afraid that a lion is going to come and just savagely kill you off. It won't happen. Umarachem v'chitchem. There will be a fear that the animal kingdom will have towards humanity. Aye, what are we supposed to eat? Salads are not so easy to access nowadays. There's nothing growing. It will take time. So God says, the second to last paragraph, V'cheneged ha-machshava ha-gimel, me'a'eder ha-mezonos, the lack of food, Amar kol remes ha-asher hu chai lachem yela olachla. God says, don't worry, you can now eat meat. You won't go hungry. You have an abundance of animals from the teva. You can eat meat and you will sustain yourself until the world fully rejuvenates and there will be an ample amount of fruits and vegetables as well. And lastly, what about Noach's concern that before he knows it, the four men will go down to two men and maybe everyone will end up killing themselves? So what was that other prohibition that's introduced at this time? What does God tell Noach? V'ach estamchem l'nafshoseichem edrosh. I will hold you accountable for murder. You'd better tell your sons. You can horse around, but don't take it any further than that. Because if you murder, I will hold you accountable. It's brilliant. What a beautiful insight of the Bravanel. That's why I call this the emotional perspective. It's different from the Radak and the Kliyakar and the Malbim. This gets into the psyche of what Noah was thinking when he left the ark. How scared he must have been. And the encouragement that he needed. We don't have too much time left, but that's if we would go on with Sukkim. That's why God has to tell Noah, Puruvu, and I'm also not going to destroy the world again. You'll make new families. You'll make new relationships. And you don't have to be worried that the world will simply be wiped out again. Go out. Have children. Populate the world. What I think is particularly fascinating to think about is what's Noah's ultimate response. Not in the first set of verses that we looked at, but the very last two psukim that I have on the source sheet in source number 10. What does Noah do with today, the new world? It's very, very curious, but the first thing Noah does, he plants a vineyard and he drinks. In source number 10, Vayachel Noach ish adama vayita karev. And Noah began to be a master of the soil and he planted a vineyard. Vayesht minayayin vayishkar vayiskal besoch ohala. And he drank of the wine and became drunk and he uncovered himself within his tent. Perhaps Noah felt hopeless. Perhaps what we just read about from Itzik Menger, the poet who felt alone, who felt that the world was lost, those same emotions were felt by Noah millennia earlier. It's not easy to overcome challenges. It's not easy to overcome challenges when they are quite vast and formidable. What happened? Perhaps one could suggest that Noah just felt too overwhelmed by his circumstances. The images of his loved ones from before never really left his mind. And while he was able to give his children the chizuk to go on, perhaps Noah was simply overwhelmed by all of the destruction that he saw, that he drank, and he drank, and he drank. Noah gives up. The concept of Noah giving up is one that we can even find before the Mabul. The contrast between Avraham, when he finds out that Sodom is going to be destroyed, jumps into action. Noah is silent. Maybe this was already part of his personality from before the Mabul, but all of the events
during the Mabul and afterward just become too much to bear. Right? Right. Interesting. Very interesting. So I think it's very interesting. It's a very, very curious. Let me just finish. I'm happy to take questions. But I do think these last two psukim that I have for you in the source sheet raise some profound questions. When you think about that emotional response, the emotional insight from the Abraham Avinel, was Noach up for the challenge or did Noach fall short? And I can tell you personally, I'm a rabbi in a shul where we have a number of Holocaust survivors. I am absolutely inspired by the similarities that they had in their life to that day after the flood when Noach opens the door. The Jewish people, Noach, yes, he's a progenitor of humanity ultimately, but we have a special seed. We've got that seed of Abraham, who does not give up, battles God until God says, "No, Abraham, you're not going to win this one." But he doesn't give up until the very end. And that's something unique to the Jew. The ability to look at all of the devastation, the evil that exists in the world, but to go further. The generation of Holocaust survivors that looked at a world full of evil and somehow had the fortitude to rebuild, to be Noach, but perhaps not to make the same mistakes of Noach. I just want to read you one last paragraph and then I'll conclude my formal remarks. I'm happy to stay for questions. But I want to read you the last paragraph from that very story that I read to you earlier about Rabbi Lau and Rabbi Frankel going to visit the poet. Listen to what Rabbi Lau writes, and with this I conclude. "Although I understand Itzik Menger, I choose to identify with those who suffered intensely during the war, but who opted to lead their lives in a very different mode. The very horrors they experienced pushed them to take advantage of every moment, to live life to the fullest. For them, isolation was not automatically a reason for depression. Instead, loneliness often served as the catalyst for ambition, the desire to accomplish, to come to terms with those terrible years. As Solomon's father, the poet King David, wrote in Psalms, 'Make us glad according to the days wherein thou hast afflicted us, and the years wherein we have seen evil.'" And that is ultimately the Jewish way. The ability to rebuild in the face of evil, to overcome challenges, to look to tomorrow with an optimism that Hashem's in control, and my job here is to do the best job I can, no matter the circumstances. So I want to thank everybody for the opportunity to give the shiur. I also just use the pulpit to let everybody know that in Fort Lee, we are running a wonderful series in conjunction with Yeshiva University. It's taking place on Wednesdays, four Wednesdays in November, with one of the outstanding professors of Jewish studies, Rabbi Dr. Richard Hidiri. If you'd like more information, there are flyers in the back, but it's really a wonderful opportunity to learn from a top-notch scholar. If you're in the Bergen County area and you have time on Wednesdays at 10 a.m., I hope you will consider joining us. Thank you very much.